Hello, this is Pastor Mo, Senior Pastor at First Baptist Church of Broussard. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to these messages. My hope is that this sermon will be a benefit to your spiritual growth and that you will prayerfully take to heart the contents of this week's message. I also encourage you to pull up the accompanying sermon notes and follow along as you listen. If you have any questions or would like to follow up after the sermon, feel free to contact me or our staff here at First Baptist Broussard. May God bless you as we begin this week's sermon. Well, we continue with our series, Walking with Jesus Through the Gospel of John, where we're going through the Gospel of John, chapter by chapter, working our way through it to get a clear picture, an accurate biblical picture of what the Bible says, who Jesus was, what he said, what he did, and what he wants from us. And that, of course, is to be authentic and genuine followers of Christ. So today, we're up to John chapter 18. We've just got three more, and we'll be finishing up here. The year is about to come to a close. But if you want to take your Bibles and turn to John chapter 18, some of the sections are in your bulletin, and all of it is on that church app for that. But the message is stand up for Jesus. We had Standing on the Promises, on Christ the Solid Rock today, some hymns and others. That our idea here is, obviously, that there's a call for us to stand up for Jesus. Not literally stand up right now, but you know what I'm talking, metaphorically, to make a stand, to be on his side, to let the world know. One thing the world needs to know is to see Christians standing up for truth and righteousness for Christ in love. Now, John 18, 1 through 40, we're fixing to watch the little video clip on this chapter, and it picks up where we left off. Jesus, you remember, this is the night before his crucifixion, and he was had the Lord's Supper and the Last Supper that he had, and then he walked out from the Last Supper room into the Garden of Gethsemane and began to do a lot of teachings and praying. He prayed for them. Last week we prayed. I talked about how somebody's praying for you and that Jesus was praying then, and he's praying now for you. Now, John doesn't cover all the historical events as the other three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which are called Synoptic Gospels. For purposes that John has in mind, he leaves out the prayer of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. That doesn't mean that when he left it out that he didn't believe it happened. It's just that they already had three Gospels that had given all that account. And John's purpose was to show that Jesus was the focus of it, that he was in control and his divinity and his focus on that. So we're picking up after Jesus had prayed for them, you know, that they would be one as he is one, he'd protect them. And then for the other Gospels, it went to the Garden of Gethsemane. They had prayed several hours. So it's after this time period that they rise up from their prayer and they're in this kind of wooded area. And they are accosted by a group of individuals. So let's watch this video clip here.
After Jesus had said this prayer, he left with his disciples and went across Kidron Brook. There was a garden in that place, and Jesus and his disciples went in. Jesus knew everything that was going to happen to him, so he stepped forward and asked them,
"Who is it you're looking for?"
"Jesus of Nazareth."
Judas the traitor was standing there with them when Jesus said to them,
"I am he."
They moved back and fell to the ground. Again, Jesus asked them,
"Who is it you're looking for?"
"Jesus of Nazareth."
"I have already told you that I mean. If then you are looking for me,
let these others go."
He said this so that what he had said might come true. "Father, I have not lost even one of those you gave me." Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's slave, cutting off his right ear. The name of the slave was Malchus.
"Put some sword back in its place."
"Do you think that I will not drink the cup of suffering which my father has given me?"
Then the Roman soldiers, with their commanding officer and the Jewish guards, arrested Jesus, tied him up, and took him first to Annas. He was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jewish authorities that it was better that one man should die for all the people. Simon Peter and another disciple followed Jesus. That other disciple was well known to the high priest, so he went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest's house, while Peter stayed outside by the gate. Then the other disciple went back out, spoke to the girl at the gate, and brought Peter inside.
"Aren't you also one of the disciples of that man?"
It was cold, so the servants and guards had built a charcoal fire and were standing around it warming themselves. So Peter went over and stood with them, warming himself. The high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered,
"I have always spoken publicly to everyone. All my teaching was done in the synagogues and in the temple where all the people come together. I have never said anything in secret. Why then do you question me? Question the people who heard me. Ask them what I told them. They know what I said."
"Did you talk like that to my priest?"
"If I have said anything wrong, tell everyone here what it was. But if I am right in what I have said, why do you hate me?"
Then Annas sent him, still tied up, to Caiaphas, the high priest. Peter was still standing there, keeping himself warm. So the others said to him, "Aren't you also one of the disciples of that man?"
"No, I am not."
But Peter denied it. One of the high priest's slaves, a relative of a man whose ear Peter had cut off, spoke up.
"Didn't I see you with him in the garden?"
"No."
And at once, a rooster crowed. Early in the morning, Jesus was taken from Caiaphas' house to the governor's palace. The Jewish authorities did not go inside the palace, for they wanted to keep themselves ritually clean in order to be able to eat the Passover meal. So Pilate went outside to them and asked,
"What do you accuse this man of?"
"We would not have brought him to you if he had not committed a crime."
"Then you yourselves take him and try him according to your own law."
"We are not allowed to put anyone to death."
This happened in order to make come true what Jesus had said when he indicated the kind of death he would die. back into the palace and call Jesus.
Are you the king of the Jews?
Does this question come from you? Have others told you about me?
Do you think I'm a Jew? It was your own people and the chief priests who handed you over to me. What have you done?
My kingdom does not belong to this world. If my kingdom belonged to this world, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish authorities. No. My kingdom does not belong here.
Are you a king, then?
You say that I am a king. I was born and came into the world for this one purpose. To speak about the truth. Whoever belongs to the truth listens to me.
And what is truth? I cannot find any reason to condemn him, but according to the custom you have, I always set free a prisoner for you during the Passover. You want me to set free for you, the King of the Jews?
As you can see, only three that are the bright spots in this. The rest of them are dark and either stand against or stand in opposition to Jesus. And the point of this today is for us to look through some of these and to make sure that we are not standing in one of these spots other than, well, for us, 7 or 12, another disciple or every one of the truth. But 13 is an unlucky number, so we're just going to go with the lucky number 7. Some key characters, and we're going to look at these, how they stood in relation to Jesus, and to see if there's some examples that we can follow and some activities and behaviors that we can avoid to make sure that we are seen as someone who stands for Jesus. So let's begin with everybody's favorite disciple to hate, Judas. Chapter 18, verses 2 through 5. Judas, who betrayed him. John, who wrote this, wanted to make sure that we understand very much he did not have much fondness for Judas. Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place because Jesus often met there with his disciples. He's talking about the place where they had went to pray and to gather. It was a normal spot. So Judas took or guided a company of soldiers and some temple police from the chief priests and the Pharisees and came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Then Jesus, knowing everything that was about to happen to him, and that's a very important line, even though he gets kind of lost in there. Jesus knew everything that was going on. He was not caught by surprise. Nobody was pushing him or forcing him. He had made the decision. Knowing that everything was about to happen to him, he went out and said to them, "Who is it you're looking for?" "Jesus the Nazarene," they answered. "I am he," Jesus told them. Then it comes back to our friend Judas, who betrayed him. And what does it say there? He was also standing with Jesus, with them. So the first set scenario we find here is someone who should have been by Jesus' side, who should have been on his side, but he was standing against him with his enemies. Now, most of us probably understand how painful it is to have a close friend or loved one stab you in the back, metaphorically speaking, and betray you. It's not much worse than that. Judas betrayed Jesus and stood with his enemies. I hope none of you will find yourself in that situation. Now, at one point in time, all of us were there before we became Christians. If you're a Christian here today, then we stood in opposition. Because if you don't stand with Jesus, you are automatically, default, standing against him. And that's kind of harsh, but that's the way the Bible teaches. Now, if you don't want to follow what the Bible teaches, that's your choice there. But it's very clear, Judas decided to stand with the world, with them against him. Well, let's see if maybe Simon Peter helps us out here. You know, Simon's always a good fellow. Let's see how he's going to do. Then Simon Peter, standing by Jesus. Well, that's a good start. He was standing by Jesus. Who had a sword. Now, why did he have a sword at a prayer meeting? Now, I know some church meetings get a little rough, but I don't think anybody needs a sword. All right. He drew it, struck the high priest's slave, and cut off his ear. And then John just kind of includes in parentheses there, the slave's name was Malchus. At that, Jesus said to Peter, sheathe your sword. Am I not to drink the cup the Father has given me? Well, Simon Peter started off standing by Jesus. He was bold. But he decided to disobey and disrespect Jesus by not listening to what Jesus had been saying. Jesus said, I have come for this purpose. You know, that's what I'm here for. I've come to drink the cup the Father has given me. And in essence, Peter was being very disobedient and disrespectful by not following Jesus' wishes and will. So Peter went against it. Now, unfortunately, this is not the first time that we see this sort of two sides of Peter. You know, looking good at first and then falling quickly away. I think it's Matthew 16 that Jesus was talking to his disciples and he asked him, who do you say that I am? Of course, they went off on different things. And who spoke up? Simon Peter. He says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, you are said right. And then, five verses later, Peter is looking at Jesus and says, no, you're not. You're not going to die. You're not going to do that. You see, Peter just kind of goes, he's with you, and all of a sudden he drops out against you. And back up and back down. That's that impetuous nature of Peter, and many of us fall like that. And probably more of us are probably like Simon Peter than Judas, I hope, anyway. If you're going to pick somebody to a lesser character. At least, you know, most of you are probably with Jesus most of the time, and you follow him. But when pressure comes or a situation comes up, we have a tendency to fall back on our own personal opinions and attitudes and biases rather than biblical ones. All of us here have biases. It don't matter what age you are, what race you are, what economic level you are, we all have biases. And technically, bias is not a negative. It's just a statement. But it's when it's used against something, against the truth and against the right, then we find ourselves standing with Simon Peter, who decided that he knew better than Jesus. That's basically what he was saying. Jesus, I know better than you. You're not going to die. Now remember, they also said at the Last Supper, he said, no, you're not going to leave us. You can't leave us. You know, Jesus had said these statements. Too many times we argue with Jesus. Have you ever won an argument with Jesus? Well, if you did, you paid the price, I'm sure, and you realize that it's a mistake to argue and turn against Jesus, because eventually He's going to just let consequences. He don't have to do anything. Just let your consequences of your behavior catch up with you. And he can remove his protection. So Simon Peter, maybe he'll come back better. Don't count your chickens. He's going to revisit again. And he's going to build us up and then let us down again. All right, let's go to another set of bad characters. Annas and Caiaphas. Now, this was a father-in-law and son-in-law team that was the religious leaders of the Jews that hated Jesus because everything Jesus was talking about was upsetting their financial and power kingdom. It was throwing them off. They were losing control, and so they couldn't have that happen. Then the company of soldiers, the commander and the Jewish temple police, arrested Jesus and tied him up. First, they led him to Annas, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Then Annas sent Jesus bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now, why did he send it to the father-in-law of the high priest rather than the high priest? Well, it's sort of like the godfather of the mob is the real power. But there's always a front man that's kind of taken that's in charge. But really, he takes his orders from things. Caiaphas was taking his orders from his father-in-law. Father-in-law was saying, you do this. So they naturally brought him to Annas because that was the power source. And then Annas said, well, you just go ahead and take him to Caiaphas. You know, I'm not supposed to be here, but I'm glad you did. But Annas and Caiaphas, they stood against Jesus in accusation. Judas stood against him and betrayed him with others. Simon Peter stood with him and then disobeyed him and disrespected him. And then Annas and Caiaphas stood in opposition and accused Jesus of evil and of wrong. Again, hopefully none of us here fall in this category. But there are numerous, as a rather large percentage of the population of the world and many United States, who do stand against Jesus. They accuse him of being a bigot, of being narrow-minded and irrelevant. So they are acting as a court themselves and accusing Jesus. We can't accuse Jesus. Well, let me take that back. You can, but it's fruitless, and it will not turn out well. Because you can do anything you want, really. Except for maybe jump the Grand Canyon on a motorbike. But, you know, you do most anything you want in life. But there are some consequences. So, let's keep going. We're finally getting to the one of two bright lights in this group of 13. Another disciple. Now, I don't even know his name. Well, we're going to kind of figure that out here, but our friend Peter comes back into view here, and there's a slave girl in the picture. John 18, 15 through 17. Meanwhile, now this is while Jesus was in there with Caiaphas and Annas and doing their trial. Outside, Simon Peter was following Jesus, as was another disciple. Now that sounds good, doesn't it? Simon Peter, yeah, he had messed up, cut the ear, but now he followed Jesus with another disciple. But we've got to keep reading before we give him too much credit. That disciple, which is the other disciple, was an acquaintance of the high priest. So he went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard. But Peter remained where? Standing outside by the door. So here he was, he followed Jesus, but he wouldn't follow him all the way. Ever seen anybody like that? That they'll follow Jesus to a certain point, they'll give him certain credit, but they won't go all the way. Peter let him down. Now, this other disciple, it's not listed, but it's almost a given that it's John, the writer of this book. So, John was the one bright light. He stood with Jesus in the trial. Now, I'm sure you know the answer to this. At the cross, at the crucifixion, ladies, you were well represented. Thank you for the ladies. One poor disciple was there. And who was that? John. John was there at the trial. when it counted, and under pressure. I mean, his life was at risk. But he stood up. And he stood at the cross. That's the example I want us to follow. That's what I want to be. I want to be John. I want to follow through. I want to be that disciple who follows Jesus and stands with him in his trials and even into death. That's what it takes. That's the authentic and genuine following. Well, poor Peter stayed outside. He just chickened out. And there's another chicken that comes into play here a little bit. But Peter remained outside. So the other disciple, John, the one known as the high priest, went out and spoke to the girl at the gate. And the slave girl, who was the doorkeeper, said to Peter, as he was walking in, "You aren't one of this man's disciples too, are you?" Now, Peter had a choice, had a chance to make things right. Again, like he messed up and made it right, messed up and made it right. What happened in this case? What did he say? "I am not." Now, the verses, there's two more times that Peter is given that opportunity to confess Jesus, and he denied two more times. And one of the times, the Greek almost gives indication that he cursed in his saying of, "I'm not his." What a sad situation. Peter letting us down. But thank goodness for John. Remember him, because we've got a couple of more bad guys to go. And this other disciple, John, he was the disciple that was the type of person that we need to be. And I think this kind of fits well. I came across this picture here. Real men stand up for Jesus. That's a fact, Jack. Well, real women do as well. But John stood up for Jesus. But someone who was not a real man, he may have had a beard like them, but he was not a real man, was Pilate. Pilate, who was the governor or the procurator, the Roman ruler of that region, the most powerful man, who had full control and access to do with Jesus whatever he wanted. Pilate came out and stood before them and said, now this is the chief priest and the Jewish leaders and all those who were accusing Jesus. He stood out and said, "What charge do you bring against this man?" And they kind of had a smart mouth response. "If this man weren't a criminal, we wouldn't have handed him over to you." So Pilate told them, "Take him yourselves and judge him according to your law." Pilate didn't want anything to do with it. "It's not legal for us to put anyone to death," the Jews declared. And I'm sure Pilate swallowed deeply and was choked up when he found out they're talking about death. Because that's a whole different picture. They said this so that Jesus' words might be fulfilled, signifying what kind of death he was going to die. Then Jesus, we'll skip a first couple of verses, go down to verse 37. Jesus looked at Pilate, who they had been in this encounter. And Pilate, we've got to give him a little bit of credit. He was at least open and trying to be honest. He was trying to let Jesus go. Now, whether he was wanting to let him go because he cared for Jesus or because his wife had told him, you know, have nothing to do with him in one of the other Gospels, or he just didn't want to fool with it and didn't want to have his hands involved in the death of another Jew so that the Roman authorities above him would say he can't handle what's going on. So Jesus looked up to him and said, standing right in front of him, he says, "Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Now, Jesus was telling Pilate exactly what he needed to do. Listen to his voice. Listen to Jesus. That's all it took. That's all that Pilate had to do. But Pilate sadly said, "What is truth?" After this, he had said this, he went out to the Jews again and told them, "I find no grounds for charging him." Now again, it seems like Pilate is really trying to do what's right. He said, "You know, what kind of charge you bring him? That's your business." And then he says, "I find no grounds for charging." Now, if Pilate had just listened to the voice of Jesus and stood by his own decision, it would have been a different story. Now, we know that when Jesus was going to die no matter what, but you know, another situation would have taken place. So Pilate, and we'll find out in the next slide, crumbled and disavowed what the truth. He didn't follow the truth. But there's one ray of light in here, a second one. We have the other disciple, but then everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. See, that's what we're talking about here is we want you to stand with Jesus like the other disciple did, along with everyone who's of the truth. We are the truth. Jesus is truth. His voice is truth. We're following. So in essence, what we're saying is you're of Christ, of Jesus. So let's finish one more character, one more sad situation, and very ironic one at that. Barabbas. Everybody knows Barabbas. Pilate then, after he said, you know, I find no grounds for it, but obviously he recognized that the people were not accepting that something else had to be done. So he said, maybe I've got a good out here. I could slide something under. So he said, you have a custom that I release one prisoner to you at Passover. So trying to lead the truth, you know, like sometimes some lawyers and people will lead with what they want you to believe. Well, this is what Pilate led with. Hey, you want me to release to you the king of the Jews? And he was hoping for a yes, so he would be off. He would be scot-free. But to his shock and dismay, they said, no, we want Barabbas. We want Barabbas. Now, Barabbas was an insurrectionist and a bandit. But something unusual about Barabbas, that we need two ironic things. Actually, the word Barabbas is Bar Abba in Hebrew. Bar means son, and Abba, what? Father. Son of the Father. Now, was he acting like the son of the Father? He was taking what was rightfully the true son of the Father, Jesus, and taking it for himself. But there's one more thing. According to ancient writings, guess what Barabbas' first name was? Jesus. Bar-Abba. So here was one Jesus, Bar-Abba, turning their back and disobeying and taking what was rightfully the true Jesus, Bar-Abba, which is Jesus the Christ, the son of the true Father, taking him and taking from what he had freedom, release, but not giving him the due honor and glory and submission. So he was robbing from Jesus, standing in the place of Jesus rather than for Jesus. Now this is a totally sad situation, and you see the little question there upon them. What or who is your Barabbas? You see, any of us, you know, if you're non-Christian, it doesn't apply here today because you're already, unfortunately, you know, against Jesus in that case. But if you're a believer here today, we have to face our own Barabbases in the world today. It could be a opinion, an idea. It could be a relationship. It could be an activity that you do. It could be a belief system that you adopt that is counter to Jesus. Anything that you think, say, or do that does not line up with the teachings of the truth of Jesus is of Barabbas. So you are choosing Barabbas every time that you fail to choose Jesus and his truth. And that kind of hurts a little bit. It kind of catches us. Because I would bet, myself included, every one of us here, there are times when we choose to do something or say something or think something that Jesus wouldn't have. And we're choosing Barabbas. We're being no better than Simon Peter, who stood with him and stood against him. Not much better than Judas, who stood with him and then turned against him. Totally. So Judas betrayed Jesus. Peter denied him. Israel rejected him. Pilate crumbled. And the question is, will you stand up as another disciple did? Stand up for those, along with those who are of the truth. Every day, we have we face a decision. Choose Christ or choose Barabbas, the world, our selfishness. Christians can choose Barabbas, and they do often. Not without certain, consequences and behaviors. But we are all capable and have chosen metaphorically Barabbas over Jesus. Let's not let that happen anymore. Christians that are here, you need to stand up. Because you see, authentic and genuine followers of Christ, they take a stand for Jesus. What this nation needs, what your family needs, what our neighborhoods need, what this world needs, is for authentic and genuine followers of Christ to stand up for Jesus. Even when it's inconvenient, not popular, possibly even rather negative, dire consequences. Don't choose Barabbas. Choose Jesus. Choose the truth. Now, will that mean it's going to always work out for the best? No. You may lose your life, lose your job, lose a relationship, lose a friendship. But the eternal rewards and the benefit of Jesus takes precedence over anything of our own individual desire. Don't let your opinions, your ideas, overrule those of Jesus.
This is Pastor Moak again. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this sermon. Maybe something you've heard in the message or read in the notes has challenged your thinking about your faith. If so, our staff is here to help in whatever way we can. Or if you prefer, check out the Faith Life tab located on our homepage at www.fbcbroussard.com. There you can find answers about salvation, spiritual growth, and getting plugged into a local church. And don't forget to check out the other sermons in this series as well. May God bless you.